Welcome to Tosfos Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Basra Daf Chof. In our previous shiur, we encountered a halacha of Shmuel that states a rokik in a chalon. If you have a chalon, an opening between two rooms, and in one room there is a corpse, and the opening, the aperture between the two rooms has an opening of a tefach or more, the tumah will pass from the room with the corpse into the other room and defile whatever is in there. If you put a baked good, a wafer-like good, and certainly a thick baked good in that chalon, Shmuel says it will not be considered a reduction of the opening because the owner will take it away, he'll take it to eat it, and it won't remain there. So that even though right now it might physically be reducing the opening to less than a tefach, but it's considered as if it's not there because, as we said, the owner will take it away. So by introducing that factor of owner eventually taking it away, Shmuel tells us that you do not have a reduction of the opening to block the tumah. On that point, we saw already we raised questions in our previous year, and we continue with the triangle that you'll see on the fourth line from the top where we open today's shiur, a continuation of the questioning. Before we get into the actual Gemara text, which your eye might have caught a series of numbers in circles within the Tanaic source, we've numbered up till 10, and then following that down the page you see triangles with numbers in them. On the side of the Gemara under our Nosei, which we call Hemshech, a continuation of the Nosei of the topic, Mivneh, structural note, and this continues till Amid Beis, we've numbered 1 through 10, Eser Dugmois, Shel Dvorim. We're reading on in our margin 10 examples of things shelechayra adam loy mevatlo. At first glance, it would appear a person is not going to abandon these items in the window. V'cholzois memait, and even so, they have the capacity of reducing the opening to less than a tefach. V'koshe kushios al Shmuel v'koshe. This represents a difficulty. This source represents a difficulty. We have a series of questions from within the source on Shmuel, Yomar Liel, who had said earlier, the rak dvorim shodem mevatlom osam mematim. According to Shmuel, only things that you abandon there will be effective in reducing the opening. So now we turn to the source, and recognizing that we will be explaining each one of the items on its own, as you can see with the triangle numbers going through the Gemara. Meisve, asovim shetolshon v'nichon b'chaloin. Grasses that are plants that you detached and left them in the window, or they grew on their own into the window. It would seem from here that they're at these olu me'alein b'chalonos, they're not detached. Those are the first two examples. Umatlomias shein bohen sholosh al sholosh, pieces of fabric. Pieces of fabric that do not have a 3x3 finger measure. V'ho'eva v'abosar medulon b'vehemu b'chaya, dangling limbs or flesh from animals. V'oif shishocham b'chalon, a bird that settled in the window. V'oif kichavim shiyosha b'chalon, an idol worshiper that's sitting in the window. Ben Shmoina. Ben Shmoina is we'll say a premature baby, but specifically after 8 months of pregnancy, the baby was born. That's in contrast to a 7 or 9 month pregnancy. And we'll speak about this a little more in the Gemara itself. But a baby like that, hamunach b'chalon, that's lying in that window, v'hamelach salt, v'klicheres, pottery or clayware, v'sefer Torah, kulam imematim b'chalon. And notice we've dashed underline that, kulon mimaltin b'chalon, all of these are effective items for reducing the opening of that window, of that chalon. Avol, in contrast, hasheleg, vabord, vaglid, vakfor, This list includes snow and hail and different kinds of frost and vehamayim and water. Kulon ein mematin b'chabon. We glance at Rashi, and from time to time, especially when we're learning the Tosfos, it's significant to refer back to Rashi's explanations. Here, v'hashelig v'haborod, Rashi on the upper part of the narrow line says, "Hoyu v'nimukim me'alehem," since they melt on their own, even without the owner removing them, on their own they will they melt. Ein mematin, because of that, they are not going to reduce. V'chein mayim, the reference to water, shebekli, it's water in a vessel. This is in accordance with the rule that we saw in our previous year concerning the chovis that was filled with the grogros, the Tanaic source there had said, that if the grogros cannot stand on their own without the aid of the vessel, then the grogros are not memayit. Likewise, the water can't remain there on its own without being contained within a vessel, so the water is not memayit. Now the Gemara focuses on the items. V'ha'asavim, how can you say that grasses in a window serve to reduce the aperture? But chazu lebehemto, they're fit for his animal, so that the owner will take those grasses and feed it to his animal. They are not going to be left there, and still, even though he's going to take them away for his animal, they still are memai. That's the kashan shmuel. The Gemara says, no, he won't take them away from there. He will abandon them there. Be'afrizosa. Afrizosa, Rashi says, v'hu sam hamavas lebehema, it's poison for the animal. The Gemara asks, oi she'olu me'alehen, grasses that grew on their own into the window are memait. So we ask, Kevan de Koshu Lekaisel Shokalahu. This question of the Gemara is based on what we saw in the Mishnah at the beginning of the Perek, that you have to keep Zroyim plants away from walls. So if you have grasses growing, obviously they're near the wall, they're growing into the wall. Into the window, so the roots of these plants are near the base of the wall. And Rashi says what we just pointed out: they're machlidimos, so they loosen the earth at their roots. And if that's next to the wall, which appears to be the case, that's going to affect the firmness of the foundation of that wall. And the owner will certainly remove it, so he's not going to abandon it there. And yet it says in this source that it's memayit, that's a kasha on Shmuel. Omar Rabo Bekoisel Churba. Rabo says that he's not going to remove it because out of any interest for preserving the wall, because it's the wall of a ruin. Rav Papa Omar Afilu Bekoisel Yishuv, even if you're talking about a wall of a structure in a settled area as opposed to a ruin, nevertheless it's not going to affect the wall. Because beboyin chutz l'shloisha lachalon, the base of the grass, the roots, of the grass of these asofim are more than three tfochim from the wall, and that was the shiur that we had seen when learning this halacha of the marchik zroim from a wall, and that's. And with that distancing, it won't damage the wall. So he will leave them there. The Gemara asks from example number three, matlonios, pieces of fabric that don't have a 3x3 finger measure. The 3x3 finger measure, by the way, is the minimum size for fabric in being able to absorb Tuma. It's Dovar HaMakabal Tuma, and we've already seen the rule in our previous year that an item that is capable of absorbing Tuma does not prevent, doesn't block tumah. But if it's less than 3 by 3 fingers, it would the thinking is that it's not mekabel tumah and it's therefore memayit. However, but the owner is going to take them away as well. Chazulei lekriya de levusha, they're fit for repairing a tear in clothing, what we would call fit for using as patches. So the Gemara says, no, he's not going to use it as a patch. Besmichta, it's very thick. The Gemara, and therefore not useful as a patch, as is the Loshen you could see in Rashi, is tloy. The Gemara asks, chazu le'umana, it's fit though to use as an absorbent material for a blood letter, after making the incision on the flesh, so he would apply this as a type of what we would call today maybe gauze or something like that to absorb the blood. The Gemara says no, he won't use it. He'll leave it in the wall, in the chalon, because it's beriska. It's a rough or coarse material that would scratch the patient. Question: Iberiska. If that's what this source is describing, type of sackcloth material, as opposed to cotton fabric, if that's what it is, then the shiur, the dimension mentioned in the source, doesn't correspond. We described in the source a small piece of fabric, less than 3 by 3 fingers, because when you get to 3 by 3 fingers, it's mekabel tumah. But if you're dealing with sackcloth, with riska, which is very coarse material, she'en bohem arbo'al arbo'al miboyale, the shear changes completely. If it's less than 4 by 4 tvachim, it's not mekabel tumah. So why does the source indicate that we're talking about fine fabric as opposed to coarse material? The Gemara says, well, it's coarse, but it's not actual sackcloth. It's ke'en riska. It's like riska. It's like riska, which is, we say, that scratchy material that has the shiur of sack, the sackcloth. It's but it's not real sackcloth. It's we'll say cotton. Just it happens to be coarse and would scratch the patient. So the umana, the blood letter, is not going to take it from the window. Question: We're speaking of an animal that has dangling limbs or flesh, and we say that the aver and basar, the dangling limbs and flesh that are in the window, are going to reduce the aperture. Well, arkavos, the animal's going to run away. It's not going to stay there. In other words, on its own, it's not going to last. So the Gemara says, "Bikshur, the animal is tied there." Question: Shachit la, but he's going to slaughter it. The owner will slaughter it and eat the meat. This one's bitmea. We're talking about a non-kosher variety animal, so he's not going to slaughter it. He'll leave it there. Question: Mazvin la lenachri, he might sell it to a Gentile, and he'll eat it. Bikusha, no, even the Gentile's not going to eat, because it's kusha. It's thin, it's scrawny, it has no meat value. Question: Posik shodi lo leklovim, but he'll cut it off and throw it to the dogs. In other words, he'll cut off the limb that's in the window and throw it to the dogs. So there you, he's not going to leave it there. And still, the source says it's memaye kashan shmuel. No, he won't cut it off. Since it would cause pain to the animal, he won't do thusly. The Gemara asks from example number 5. We say that a bird that's settled in the window, that has the capacity of reducing it to less than a tefach. Moses says, how can that be? Parach v'yozil. It's going to flutter away, and yet it is memayet. Isn't that a kashan shmuel? No, says no, it's not going to fly away because it's tied there. Question: Shochet leil, slaughter it? No, he won't, because betomei, it's an unkosher variety bird. Question: Mazvin le lenochri, will he not send? He could sell it to a non-Jew and he'll eat it.
The Gemara says, no, but kalnisa, this is a scrawny, very scrawny bird, and it's not fit for anyone to eat. Question, but that, so we won't, they, people won't eat it, but yoyev le liyanuka, he might give it to a child to play with. The Gemara says, no, but masare, the bird will scratch the child, so he's not going to do that. He'll leave it there. The Gemara asks, but kalnisa lo masarto, you said it's a kind of bird that a Gentile wouldn't eat, and you said it's a kalnisa bird, it doesn't scratch. Someone says, it's not exactly a kalnisa. Ke'en kalnisa. It's a scrawny bird that's like a kalnisa, but this particular bird does scratch. So he will leave it in the window. So far, Shmuel is surviving the onslaught of questions. But we continue. An idol worshiper that settled into the window, he's just going to get up and leave. How can that be memayit? If you hold like Shmuel, and yet it's Mamayit, so we have a kash on Shmuel. Gemara says, no, he's not going anywhere, but Kofos, he's tied up there. Question, Asi Chavre Shorile, his friend's going to come along and release him. Gemara says, no, B'mitzora, he is suffering from Tzoras, and people don't come into contact with those suffering from that disease. The Gemara says, well, Asi Mitzora Chavre Shorile, a fellow sufferer will come and release him, and yet he reduces the opening. We have a Kashan Shmuel. Hello, so we change our answer to B'chavushe Malchus. We're talking about someone who has been chained into the window as being a by government order. So no one's going to come to release him. He's going to remain there and remain there and remain there. And that's why he's able to be considered a reducer of the opening. Question, Uben Shmoina Hamunach B'chalon, we saw example number 7, a baby born after 8 months of pregnancy that's lying in the window. We say that he reduces the opening. I want to add just one point of background, and that is that assuming that there is no medical intervention when you look at a baby that it did not experience a full-term pregnancy and was born within 8 months, didn't enter into the 9th month of pregnancy, this baby will not survive. So that's a unique element of the Ben Shmoina. So a Ben Shmoina that's lying in the window, he's able to reduce the aperture. The Gemara asks, Asio Ime Doriel Yadariole. The child's mother is going to come and take it away. So it's not going to remain in the window, and yet he does reduce. That's our Kashan Shmuel. Where it says, B'Shabbos, the baby is lying in the window on Shabbos. And as a result, the mother is not going to be taking it away. Desanya ben shmoina reu kevin. The also the talta b'shabbos. A ben shmoina is viewed in halachic terms like a stone, and just like a stone is something forbidden to move on Shabbos, so too this baby is forbidden to move on Shabbos. Aval imo shoicha olav umenikso mitnei asakona. The mother is allowed to bend over this child and nurse it because of the danger to the mother in an over accumulation of mother's milk, and so to relieve her, save her from any physical harm, she is entitled to do that. But her actual moving of the baby on Shabbos is forbidden. So that as far as this period of time is concerned, as far as Shabbos is concerned, that baby is not going anywhere, and therefore it's able. The aperture is considered reduced. We'll see later. The Tosfos at the very bottom, he says we're talking about. You might ask, so he's not going to be moved on Shabbos, but after Shabbos the mother's going to move it. And yet it reduces, so do we not still have a kasha on Shmuel? So Tesis will answer that we're talking about a child that's in death throes. It's a geises, and it will die before Shabbos, and its burial will be right over there in the window. and hence it's going to be, it will remain there permanently. We continue, number 8, melach. In the list of items that reduce, we saw melach, that's salt. Chazio lei, it's fit for the owner, he'll take it away, and yet it reduces, and that's our kasha on Shmuel. No, it's not fit, b'merirta, it's bitter. Question, b'chazio leoros, it's fit for the tanning of leather. Salt is one of the ingredients used in that process. And yet it does reduce. Kashan Shmuel, no, the is ba kitzi. The salt in question, the salt in the window, has thorns in it, and it would scratch his hands. He's not going to use it as part of the tanning process. The Gemara says, well, kevon de kashi le kaisel shakla. Salt is injurious to the wall, as we saw in our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, we saw a list of different materials that could cause damage to a wall. So he's going to remove it, and yet it does reduce. No, the yasfa haspa, the salt is sitting on a shard, so that when we speak of the salt being injurious to wall, that's if the salt is in direct contact with the wall. But the wall, the wall is protected by the salt sitting upon a chaspa. Question, chaspa gufa techutz, why speak of the salt reducing the opening when you can speak of the shard itself reducing the opening? We continue at the top of Omid Beis. The Gemara answers, the less ba shi'ura. Kidisnan cheres kidei litain bein patsim l'chavero. At this point, we're going to just present Rashi's explanation, but we're going to also emphasize that Tosfos has a different take on this. But as far as Rashi is concerned, the less bo shiura means it doesn't have the chaspa, does not have the minimum quantity. What do you mean by minimum quantity? The concept of minimum quantity is understood through Hilchus Shabbos. And in Hilchus Shabbos, in order to determine whether one is in violation of Hoytzov, removing something from one domain to another, the item has to have a minimum level of significance. And significance is associated with a shiur. In this case, we're not dealing with an actual measure, but its use is considered shiur. What's the use of shard? We'll say the minimum use of a shard that would give it significance. As far as Hilchus Shabbos is concerned, it would then result in the person being in violation of the Isser Haitzah. So the source that we just read was Cheres, a piece of clay. It would have significance as far as Shabbos is concerned. If it's Kidei Litein Ben Patsim L'Chavero, use, of course, as we always have been saying, the Pirush Chai, the Book of Illustrations, to appreciate this. Rashi describes in a window, as we'll say, as part of a window frame, there are two pieces of wood that are set into a window opening to constitute the frame, and the pieces of shard are used to secure the wood posts in place. Rashi gives further detail to it, but that's the idea of Bein Patsim L'Chavero. It's the use of the shard as part of a window frame. That's the minimum shear for Hoytzah Shabbos. And as far as Rashi is concerned, the Gemara is saying the less bal shear doesn't have the shear kidisnan as is taught in Masechet Shabbos. And as a result of that, the shard in our Gemara, in the window, the shard is as if it's not there. Now, as far as Rashi is concerned, one can understand things as follows. That in physical terms, the shard, you might have had an opening just a bit more than a tefach. You have this very small shard in that window between the room with the corpse and the second room. And physically, there is less than a tefach of opening now because that shard is in the window. However, since the shard doesn't have the shiur of Shabbos, it's as if it's not there. So that the opening in the window remains that of a tefach. The shard that you have is not able halachically to reduce the opening. I emphasize the word halachically, namely, even though physically the opening is less than a tefach, but since it doesn't have this minimum shear of usefulness, and which is relevant to Shabbos, so too with regard to our halacha, the two halachas, the halacha of Tuma, of Chatzitza Pnei Tuma, and the halacha of Shabbos are intertwined, and therefore it's not effective in reducing the opening. So I know that I sound a little repetitious, but it's important for the Tosfos that in Mitzvah Shem we will learn. According to Rashi, you can have a situation where the window is physically now less than a tefach in opening, but it is still going to be responsible for the passage of Tuma, because the shard that's there is less bashir, doesn't have the shear of Hilchis Shabbos. Let's continue in the Gemara. Clef Harris, Chazi Lay. In our list of items that we said are Mimayit, are Clef Harris, are pottery. But clayware. Isn't it fit for the owner? Isn't he going to take it away? And yet it's Mimayit. That's a Kashan Shmuel. Gemara says, no, but Demitnef. It's filthy. Whereas, even if it's filthy, Chazi Lumna, it's useful for a blood letter. The blood flows from the patient, it will flow into this particular clay vessel, and it's irrelevant whether the vessel is dirty. He's not going to be eating from it, so is it not fit and it won't remain in the window, and yet it reduces the opening at Kashan Shmuel? No, it's not going to be used by an umen or by a blood letter, Daminka, because the vessel has a hole in it. Number 10, the last example from the list, Sefer Torah. Chazi Lemikra, it's fit for reading, so it's not going to remain in the window, and yet it reduces the opening. No, Bebolui, it's faded, worn out, and it's not a Sefer Torah that people would learn from. Question, Vahaboy Geniza, but does it not require burial? He's not going to leave it there in the window. The Gemara says he will leave it in the window. Shamtei Genizasa, its burial will be there in the window, and therefore, it is able to reduce. It's not going to be taken away. He's mevatil it over there. Omar Rav. And before we go further, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading. The role of this Gemara will be Lahazvir Shitois Rav Shmuel Beinyin Asias Mechitza Mimelach. Rav and Shmuel will be dealing with halachas regarding the use of salt in the context of making a mechitza, of making a wall, or that which separates. Omar Rav, b'chol oisin mechitza, chutz mimelach uravav. When we speak about mechitza, so the Rabbeinu Gershom adds over here, whether the Inyan Shabbos, or as a block in to separate one from Tumah. So you can use any material for making a mechitza except for salt and revav. Revav would be fats. Ushmul omra filu melach, even salt, is suitable for serving as a mechitza. Omar rav popo velo pligi. You see the use of this house marking is explained on the sign under the Mivneh. Velo pligi is highlighted here, and you see a few lines later. Drochem lahasbi Rav Shmuel shaloye b'nei machlokas. These are approaches to present Rav and Shmuel in such a way that they're not arguing on one another. Even though right now it seems that they're arguing, the Gemara says, velo pligi, they're not arguing. Ha b'melach stoimis, ha b'melach is struknis. Shmuel's halacha is with regard to salt that's called stone salt. It's an expression, stone salt. It's a hard, it's hard like rock. So it's suitable for using as a mechitza. The other kind of salt, the istruknis salt, is not hard like rock. So it's not something that you can rely upon for making a mechitza. Now the Gemara says, in light of something that Rabba teaches, v'hashtod yom Rabba oisadam shnei tzvurei melach u'minyach aleihem kira. Rabba is referring to a halacha concerning the entrance to an alleyway, a mavoy, a dead end street, an alleyway, that if you have a crossbeam over the entrance of that alleyway, that entitles the public to carry with on Shabbos within the alleyway. The Korah, in this case, is, we'll say, in the realm of mechitza making, and it's like in halachic terms, it's the crossbeam serves like a wall blocking off the mavui from the public thoroughfare. The crossbeam can be supported on two piles of salt. That's Ois Adam Shnei Tzvurei Melach. A person makes two piles of salt, the piles of salt having a minimum height of 10 tefachim. And then upon the two piles that are positioned on either side of the entrance to this alleyway, you position upon the two piles running across the entranceway, a height of at least 10 tefachim from the ground, a crossbeam, a korah. And that's considered, we'll say, a kosher korah. How is the korah going to last there? So it says, yeah, because shamelach mamedes sakor v'korah, mamedes samelach. The melach gives support to the korah, gives the korah its height. And the korah, it's the weight the korah presents upon the salt, the gravitational pressure that the salt experiences by having the weight of the korah upon it, it keeps the salt in place. So then when you go back to Rav and Shmuel, afilu melech is truknis. Both Rav and Shmuel are speaking within that kind of salt, velo pligi, and there's no argument between them. Hadika korah. According to Shmuel, said you can make a mechitza using salt. Yes, you can use even istruknis salt if you have a korah across over the top, holding the salt in place, forming the desired mechitza, and that's okay. And Rav, who says that you can't use salt for mechitza purposes, he too is talking about the istruknis salt, the lekha korah, in a case where there is no korah running across the top. And hence the salt will fall away, and hence it can't serve as a mechitza. Marchikenes erechayim shloisha min hashechev shein arba min harechev. We saw in the Mishnah the requirement of distancing a grinder, grindstone, which by maintaining the required distance, you'll find that it's three from the lower stone, the larger diameter lower stone, that's the shechev, which turns out to be four from the narrower diameter upper stone, that's the rechev. My time all, why is there the necessity of distancing the grindstone from the wall? Mishum tirya. Tirya is vibration. In the operation of the grindstone, the ground underneath will vibrate, and if it's close to the wall, so it's common ground, and that vibration is not good for the wall, so keep it away from your neighbor's wall. The Gemara asks, "V'ha Tanya, but do we not have the following source?" It says, "Veshel Chamor, Shloisha min Estribel, Shehein Arba min Akelis, Hasamai Tirya Ika." The word chamor, in a literal translation, is a donkey. Rashi is not too elaborate on this point. He simply says, rechayim shel chamor. Rashi could possibly be understood a grindstone operated by a donkey. Namely, a donkey is tied to the stone, and it walks in a circular fashion in each revolution, causing the grains to be ground into flour. Tosfos quotes the Rabbeinu Hananel, who will tell us that it doesn't mean a donkey in an animal fashion, but I think that we in English you use the term sometimes for supporting a wooden board on to form a table. We use the term, you place it on horses, The horses are simply the type of wooden legs that are constructed in a specific fashion upon which you would place the wooden board, and you have thereby formed a table. So they, in English we say a horse. In Gemara Lashon we speak of a chamor. So that the Tanaic source, using the Rabbeinu Hananel's explanation, which is, and we'll see at much greater length in the Tosfos, the grindstone spoken of here is a grindstone that's positioned upon, it's placed upon a wooden support. And though I am not an engineer and certainly not a physicist either, but my understanding is that the placing of the grinder on the wooden base, that would absorb the vibrations, and therefore tyria would not be a factor, and yet such a grindstone must be kept away from the wall. And in this Tanaic source we saw the required distancing, 3 tfachim from the istrobel. The istrobel is the base, the foundation, and the which simultaneously measures 4 tfachim from the keles. The keles is a type of funnel through which the grains are poured into and end up between the two stones. And as the Gemara says, what hosamai tiriiko, in a case of a recham shechamor, what vibration is there? So that can't be the reason for distancing grindstones from walls. Hello? Mishum kola. The reason is because of the noise. Now Rashi here says mishum kola yesh meforshim kol hanhogas hachamor. Here you can see that Rashi was referring to a grindstone actually operated by the donkey. The donkey makes noise, and v'yesh meforshim kol rechayim. Others explain that the noise caused by the grinding, the noise. Noise is something that you can see here, a certain called level of engineering sophistication, that the call it the sound waves, though they don't produce, we'll say, perceptible vibration as far as tyria that we referred to before, but sound could also be a source of damage to a wall. I think that even in current terms, there are cases of certain bridges collapsing because the certain pitch is reached in the noise level, causing a total weakening of the structure, and hence its subsequent collapse. Noise then too is a source of damage, and hence you have to keep it away from the wall, maintaining these required distances. The Mishnah also said the esatanur, an oven must be kept at a distance from wall, shloshim min akalyos shehein arba min hasofa. Rashi on the Mishnah described the tanur as being placed upon a foundation, as in order to avoid the placing of the tanur directly on the ground. The ground is cold, and that would work to the detriment of your efforts of maintaining a sufficient heat level for your baking purposes. So a foundation was created, and the foundation itself, it tapers upwards. And namely, it's wider at the bottom. That's the kalya, and that from the bottom of this foundation till the wall, you'd have to keep it three. You'd have to have a measure of 3 tefachim, and from the surface of the of this foundation, of this base upon which you'll place the oven, it would. That's the sofa, the rim. Since we said it tapers upwards, it's narrower upper part of this base, it would measure from that point till the wall 4 tvachim. Omar Abaye, Shma Mino, we can conclude from what we have just learned in the Mishnah, Kalya de Tanur Tefach, the Kalya, the base of the bottom of this foundation, extends a Tefach beyond the upper part of the foundation. Nafkamina, the benefit in knowing this is Lamekach Umemkar, for say for business purposes, if you want to order from a craftsman a kalya, it would have to have that measure, namely where the base measures a tefach wider than the safa. We now turn to the Tosis on Chaf Amud Aleph, on our Amud Aleph, to learn the Tosis and cover the Gemara that we've studied till now, till this Mishnah, which some later we'll pick up with the Mishnah. But in the meantime, we're turning to the Tosis, Divor Maschil She'olu. You'll notice on our Tosfos pages, our PDFs, it's the last Tosfos on our Tosfos page, and this corresponds to the Gemara that was five lines from the top, referring to the grasses that grew into the window, reducing the aperture to be less than a tefach. We have a taktsir, we have a summary note for this Tosfos. The first point, Tosfos Masbir, Eich Yitochen She'asovim She'olu Me'aleim Yecholim L'mayit La'atefach. How can it be that grasses growing into a window actually reduce the opening? Sh'tanan B'Maseches Eilis, when you have a mission, Maseches Eilis, Dizroyim M'chuborim Lo'chaitzitzin. There it says that plants that are attached to the ground, they're growing from the ground, cannot serve as a blockage of tumah. Rabbi Nutam, in dealing with this, he makes a distinction: mechalik bein oil l'stam chatzitza. The concept of oil is most, let's say, familiar in the realm of an overhang, a ceiling. Or we'll just use the word overhang, and in a situation where you have an oyel and you have, let's say, tuma underneath the oyel, underneath the overhang, and you have a vessel or whatever that's susceptible to tuma above the overhang, the oyel is chaitzitz b'fnei tuma, blocks the tuma. That let's say that type of tuma blockage in an oil capacity. So that's what the Mishnah in oil is saying, that the zroim ha-mechuborim cannot serve as an oil. So if you have, imagine a vine plant that's growing and is and curves over, serving as a type of covering for you as you're walking underneath it. And you have tuma above it, the tuma will penetrate, so to speak, this oil, because you're dealing with zroim hamechuborim. That is in distinction to a mere chatzitza, like our window between the room with the corpse and the other room that you're attempting to preserve the tara therein. If the window is blocked off, in other words, the opening is reduced to less than a tefach through even a growing plant, that is okay. That's effective. So that's Rabbeinu Tam's distinction. Once again, distinction between chatzitza through ohel, blockage of tuma through ohel, overhang versus stam chatzitza, mere blockage, as in the case of the window. There, that's our sugya where the growing plants are effective. Another point: Eich kan b'gemara shayin chatzitza b'fnei hatuma b'li miruach. We're talking in our sugya about some material in a window, and the material positioned in the window, we had a list of 10 things. The material that's in the window, if it reduces the opening, and that's to less than a tefach, the tumah is blocked. Did we see anything about adding to plaster the item into place? That's the term miruach, literally smearing something, the smearing of tit, of plaster, to hold it in place. No, we didn't see any mention of that. And yet, let's continue on our note. How can we speak of these things being chayisut tumah bizman shebabav kama reinu deboinon miruach kidei shehei chatzitza mo'ila? We see in the case of in Maseches Bava Kama, there the Gemara describes a jar that has within it food items that you want. Do you want to maintain its tara? And the jar has a crack in it, and you stuffed some twigs or branches into that, into the hole. The chovis, the jug mentioned there, will not protect its contents from tuma, from external tuma, unless the branches that are stuffed into the hole that developed are also plastered into place until you're memareach. So we see that miruach is an essential element in blocking a tuma. That's the question that will be dealt with in this Tosfos. Having said all of that, now we turn to the Tosfos itself. She'olu me'alehen tema. We ask as a question, heif mimatin tefach, how can the asom shalom me'alehem block the tuma by reducing the opening to less than a tefach? Hotam sefas oilis, elu loy mevien v'loy chaytzitzin. The following do not serve as a conveyor of tuma, and I want to emphasize for our discussion right now, v'lo chaytzitzin means they don't block tuma. And the list includes hazroyim v'yarokos ha-mechubarim l'kaka, growing plants and vegetables do not serve as a chatzitza to block tuma, with some exceptions. Chutz min hayarokos shemonu, with the exception of the plants that were listed off. Pirush, what do you mean the plants that were listed off? Hano demonu liel, those that were mentioned in Mishnah Aleph of this parak of Oilus. We just a moment ago we were citing Parak Ches Mishnah Hay, and there are a list of plants in Mishnah Aleph of Parak Ches, demavian v'chaytzitzin, that do serve as a conveyor and a blocker of tuma. And those plants are listed, we're not going to translate, but they are ha'irus v'akisum v'irokis chamor v'delas yivonis. That is what you can see in Mishnah Aleph. V'im kain, if this is then so, hechi kotoni dasom shol me'aleim d'chaytzitzin, how can grasses that grew on their own into the window serve as a blocker of the tuma to reduce the opening to less than a tefach? The Tirutz Rabbeinu Tam, the Hosom, there in Maseches Oyelis, Ayri Le'inyin Oyel, the Ein Nasin Oyel, Lochutz Bifnei Atuma, Al Mashitachtem O Shaleim, O Lahavi Tuma. Growing plants cannot serve as an overhang. The nature, or I should say, the halachic properties of an overhang are such that they can block tuma. If you have something that's, let's say, a food underneath this overhang and tuma above the overhang, if you had a formal ohel, an effective ohel, the ohel would block the tuma from above from penetrating to below, and vice versa, and the other way around as well. And likewise, lahavi tuma, that's if you have two items, you have a source of tuma and something that you want to, that's susceptible to tuma, underneath the same overhang, not one above, one below, but the two items, the source of tuma, the mace, the tumas mace, the corpse flesh, and food under the same overhang, that's lahavi tuma. The tuma will be conveyed to the food because it's under the same overhang. So in the case of Zroim and Yerokas Mechubarim, they do not function in this capacity as being a blocker of the tumah or a conveyor of the tumah. Why? The wind blows, shakes them, and they don't stand, say, continuously firmly in one spot. It's like a flying bird, a bird with its wings extended. You could say, well, that's also like an overhang. At the moment the bird is flying over, it serves as it's an overhang. No, of course not. The flying bird doesn't block tumah, and it doesn't convey tumah. And likewise, the zroim hamuchuborim mentioned in Maseches Oilus. So in that capacity, so we say they're not effective. It's not an effective chatzitza when you're dealing with it as an oihel. But if you're dealing with the zroim uchuborim as a simple blocker of tumah from one room into the next, not in the overhang capacity, but simply as a blocker of the tumah, it is effective. Hitsha ri. Here the ri raises a new question. The hacha bekula shmeitzin in our topic. Lo po inon miruach lo ba'asovim v'lo b'chovis. There doesn't seem to be any requirement of miruach, of plastering the grasses or the jug into place. Deparach liel. We saw earlier in the Gemara it suggested he gufa techutz. Let the jug itself be the source of blockage. The jug itself, that's it. The jug itself, without any plastering, no reference to plastering. And yet, ubagezel kamo, the ninth parak of Bava Kama, omar rova hare omru chaviz shenikva v'sosmu shmorim hitzilua. A jug that developed a hole in it, and there were shmorim. Shmorim is grape. In the winemaking process, there is debris, sediment that exists. If the sediment blocked, stuffed the hole, hitzilua. That means it serves as a, it saves the food contained within this jug that had a hole, but the hole is sealed with shmorim. That protects the contents of the chavas from tuma. If, let us say, the jug were brought into a room with a corpse in it, the food contained within would be protected from the tuma. Now, but here we want to emphasize, if the hole in that jug happens to be sealed with a branch, with a twig or piece of wood, it's not going to be an effective protector of the contents, ad sheyimrach min hatzdadim, until you plaster it in place around the sides of these twigs that are positioned in the hole, so that the mere reduction of the hole, and there are minimum sizes of holes in the rules of tuma, but the mere presence of an item that's in the hole, reducing the size of the hole, is not enough. You've got to plaster it into place. Why then in our sugya do we not see any reference to miruach? The Yesh Lomar, and we answer. The Hassan Boinon Mukav Tzomit Posil. We'll say that the topic in Bava Kama is a very, we'll say, specific topic. It's a topic referred to as Mukav Tzomit Posil, a vessel that is sealed with a clay cover. That's kind of a literal approach to Mukav Tzomit Posil. And there are special rules that apply to sealed vessels and their ability to protect food from tuma. So in that area of halacha of Mukav Tzomit Posil, there you need to have the miruach. L'hachi tzorach miruach. But here we're not dealing with vessels. We're not dealing with sealing vessels. Avolhacha lo boy tzomit posil. Here we're dealing with a window and the necessity of reducing the opening. If that is what you need, simply to reduce the opening, then you don't need to have the item that is reducing the opening to be plastered into place. We continue now with the next Tosfos, Dibur HaMaschil, the Oif. In our PDFs, you'll notice it's the next page. The Oif Sheshochan B'chalon. We saw reference to a bird that settled into the window as being an effective reducer. Nira de Osi Afilu le Rebbe Meir. It would appear that this works out even according to Rebbe Meir. The Omar, who says in Maseches Erevin, called over Sheesh by Ruachayim, Ein Oisin Oisoi, Loi Doifin, Lesukah, Velo Lechi, Lemovui. Living creatures cannot serve as a wall of a sukkah, nor can they serve as a post that would be positioned at the entrance to a mavui. The post in that case would, if you have a kosher lechi, so then you can carry on Shabbos within the alleyway. But if you're going to put at the entranceway a bal chai, it's not effective. So Rebbe Meir, on the surface of things, would seem to say that that anything that has the breath of life in it is not effective. So he says, "Dahainu le'inyan mechitzas asorah tfochem dafka." That's true, according to Rebbe Meir, if your goal is to form a wall or a lechi as well that has where in these laws of wall formation, you have a minimum height requirement, namely 10 tfochim. So as far as the wall of a sukkah, as far as the entrance to an alleyway, you need to have a minimum of 10 tfochim. Avohacha, le'inyim imayit b'chalon, but here, our issue is not forming walls of 10 tfochim. Our issue is simply blocking, reducing the opening in a window. So even Rebbe Meir will agree, mimata b'choldover shivat lenu. The reduction can be achieved with anything that you will abandon in place. You'll abandon in that window. And hence, even according to Rebbe Meir, the oaf could serve in to that ends. We continue with the next tesis, Ve'oved Kechavim Shiyoshav B'chalon, an idol worshipper that sat in a window. He can serve to reduce the opening. Now, tesis makes a comment based on a given, the well-known rule that we've seen already on several occasions, that a dover amakabel tuma, something that itself is subject to absorbing tuma, something that can become defiled, cannot serve as a blocker of tumah. People, and we know that Jewish folks can become tumah. There's many halachas that deal with that topic. People becoming tumah. So a person can't serve to block tumah. He himself is makabel tumah. So the Tosfos says the oved kechavim, an idol worshiper, ain't a makabel tumah, is not that which absorbs tuma, does not become defiled. Kidenaf galon mi kra beperek sheni de nazir, the pasuk which is found in Bamidbar perek yutes pasuk chaf, which is explained in the second perek of Nazir stichtiv. The pasuk that's darshened is the ish asher yitma v'lo yischato v'nichusu anefesh ha'im mitoch hakohol. The pasuk describes someone who became tomei and enters the Beis Hamikdash in a state of tumah. He will be cut off mitochakol, from within the community. And the Gemara there in Nazir says yotzei v'kechavim she'ein lo kahol. This pasuk excludes an idol worshipper. An idol worshipper is not was not associated with the concept of kahol. So at this point, then we see that an idol worshipper is not subject to tumah. Oh, if he's not subject to defilement, then he can serve to block defilement. Hence, what we saw in the source, an Ovikovim that sat in the window, assuming, of course, that he's going to be abandoned there. The Gemara spoke about being a person that was incarcerated by the government, so he is an effective means of blocking tuma. He's not mekabel tuma. Even though on a rabbinic level we know that the idol worshippers are viewed as zavim, a zav is a form of tuma. Since on a Torah level they do not absorb tuma, the idol worshippers don't absorb tuma. An idol worshipper is not said to be something that becomes defiled, so he is effective in serving as a blocker of the tuma. The im toimar de bepera gates adoifen omar. There in Maseches Nida, Perek Yitzadayfin, Omar, it says the following: Chomer b'sheretz mi b'shich v'zera. There is a stringency that you find by sheretz above shich v'zera semen. Sheretz ein lo chalukas tuma. The sheretz doesn't have this phenomenon of chalukas tuma. Umasik. And the Gemara continues and says, "Shichva zera de chaluka tuma ma hi." We said that the sheretz has a stringency over shichva zera, and the sheretz doesn't have chalukas tuma, and shichva zera does have chalukas tuma. And what does that mean? What does that mean? Shichva zera has chalukas tuma. What do you mean by that? The word chaluka means distinction. That in the realm of sheretz, no distinctions. In the realm of shichva zera, we make distinctions. What do you mean by that? If you'll say that shichva zera of a Yisrael is different, has tuma as opposed to shichva zera of nochrim, of non-Jews, is that what you mean? Well, hochinami ho'iko achbor diyam v'achbor diyabosha. In the realm of shrotzim, we also have distinctions. So you can't describe choymer b'sheretz over shichva zera when within the realm of shrotzim you have an achbor diyam, we'll call that a sea mouse, that's not mitame. Achbor diyabosha, a land mouse, a dead mouse, land mouse, is mitame. Mashma, the sheretz ein chaluka tumaso bein Yisrael l'nochri. From this, it would appear that when you're dealing with sheretz, there's no difference between Jews and non-Jews. Just like Jews become tomei through their contact with a dead sheretz, so too an idol worshiper will become tomei. In other words, if you're looking for distinctions, so with regard to shichva zera, they're fine. We make a distinction with Yisrael and Nochrim. When it comes to shrotzim, the only distinction we're able to make was between achbar diyam and achbar diyabosha. But there you didn't say anything about being Yisrael and Nochrim. Apparently everyone's together. Oh, so what do we see? We see that a Nochri is mekabel tumas sheretz. How can you have said that an idol worshiper is eno mekabel tuma? Tosis responds, Lav Pirchei, that's not a question. The Afagav, Dien, Oivde Kechovim, Temeim Besheretz. Even though in reality, idol worshippers do not become Tomei through Sheretz. So why wasn't that referred to in Maseches Nida? Ein lo chalukas tuma dumya de shichva zera. When we speak about distinctions, the distinction that you find by shichva zera is a more fundamental distinction when you're dealing with Jews versus idol worshippers. De b'shichva zera gufa iko chiluk. Within the topic, within the example of shichva zera, in words, the same material, so to speak, the same substance. If it comes from a Jew, it's a source of tumah. If it comes from an idol worshiper, it's not. That's the word gufa. With in itself, within the realm, within the example of Shechivat Zera itself, Ika Chiluk. Aval b'sheretz gufei, within the realm of the sheretz itself, Ein Chiluk, you don't find any distinctions within the specific sheretz. Mice, dead mice, are always a source of tuma. So if you're dealing with sheretz, where do you find within the realm of sheretz a distinction? So elo bahano demekabli mimenu tuma. Let's read that again. Avo b'sheretz gufei ein chiluk elo bahano demekabli mimenu tuma. If you're going to focus on land mice, you're not going to find any distinctions within the entity known as an achbar diabosha, other than the receivers of the tumah. Jews become tumah, idol worshippers don't become tumah. But we're looking, the Gemara there in Nidah is looking for a distinction within the item itself, not the effects of the item. Hilkach tzorach leminkat, there with regard to the Gemara's discussion, after saying that within the realm of shichva zera, the substance itself, you do find a distinction based on Nochri versus Yisrael. With regard to sheretz, if you want to describe a distinction, Hilkach tzorach leminkat achbor diyam veachbor diyabosha. There, you have to, we'll expand the categories and say that, okay, if you look at land mice, they are a source of tuma, and sea mice are not a source of tuma. I just want to point out that the Gemara in after saying that you find that both in the realm of Shechva Zera you find distinctions, and in the realm of Shrotzim you find distinctions. What does the Gemara there mean when it says Chomer B'Sheretz Shechva Zera? You can look the Gemara to see what its maskona is. But for our purposes, we're going to continue here. The Hod Itzterich Mi'uta, there, I should say, the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos is Mimayit, idol worshippers. And specifically, Vayikra Perek Tesvav Posuk Beis. We've included this on the side in our marked Tosfosim. On the side, it says there in the Posuk, Dabru El B'nei Yisrael, it's Moshe and Aaron should address the Jewish people, Vamartem Aleihem, Ish Ish Kiezav Mibisoro Zovo Tomehu. There's from that Posuk, it says Dabru El B'nei Yisrael, and there's an exclusion. An idol worshipper does not become tome through zov. But weren't we already mamait goyim the idol worshippers from tuma before in tumas mace at the very beginning of this Tosfos? It was mentioned that goyim are not mekabel tuma from the posuk in Bamidbar, Perek Yutes Posuk Chof, Ish Ish Sheyidmav, etc. It said mitoch hakahol. So why do you need this particular miut once we've already excluded oivdikachovim from tuma? Mishum, we answer, the tumas ziva lav tumas magohi. The tuma referred to in Vayikra Perek Tezvav Posuk Beis is tumas ziva. That's flows, emissions that emanate from within the person's body. We call that tumah yotze migufo. That's a different type of tumah than tumas maga, tumah that one absorbs through contact, like in the case of tumas meis, touching a corpse. It's not something that is yotze migufo. So even though we have a moker for tumas maga that goyim are excluded, you need to have an additional moker, an additional posuk to exclude goyim from tumas ziva. That's tumas ziva, we says lav tumas magi, Umituma zu, from tuma hayotze migufo, lo ashkechon de'imatu. We don't find them being excluded. Hence, you need to have an additional pasuk for their exclusion from that kind of tuma hayotze migufo as well. Tosis now relates to the case of the baby, 8-month baby, that was mentioned 8 lines from the top in the Gemara. Uben Shmoina Eino Mekabel Tuma Kishu Chai. The baby in the window, the 8-month baby, as long as it's living, is not Mekabel Tuma. That's as opposed to a, we'll say, a healthy, normal baby is Mekabel Tuma. Why? Why do we say the 8-month baby is not Mekabel Tuma? Delo Ikri Odom. The pasuk, when it describes a person becoming tome, the pasuk uses, the Torah uses the word Odom. And an 8-month baby is not categorized as Odom. The term Odom is you can translate literally human being, but it conveys halachic ramifications. So in halachic categories, the 8-month baby is not part of that category called Odom, and hence not subject to Tumah. And of course, that's why it serves as a chatzitza. We continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur HaMasel VeHamelach. This refers to the Gemara 9 lines from the top. It was one of the items in the list of things that can reduce the opening. Mashma mehocha, the ein melach mekabel tuma. From here, it would appear that since it can serve to block tuma, it itself is not mekabel tuma. Avol hasheleg. Now here, the Tosfos is very very. I would say is very abbreviated. The sheleg, that is the snow, which was mentioned in this brisa, together with Borod and Gleed and Kfar. It's mashma. I want to repeat. The Sheleg was listed along with other ice-related materials. It's mashma from that. We'll say guilt by association, that the Sheleg is mentioned with these materials. The reason that it doesn't block, as the source said, doesn't block, is because they melt. And it's not something that will last there. And by the way, in the next Tosfos, we will see that point. Rashi as well seemed to indicate that. So because it's not a bar kayomo, that's why it's not choytzeitz. However, if that were not our consideration, it would be choytzeitz. Okay, let's just repeat that point. The sheleg mentioned in the source appears to be ineffective as a chatzitza because it's going to melt. It's not a bar kayoma. But without that factor, it would have been able to be chaytzeitz. Now, on that point, we are going to now raise a question. You can ask, but is it not so that the sheleg is a dover hamakabel tuma? So, and because of that, it is not effective. It should not be effective in being chaytzeitz. So why do you give me the impression that's not so, that the only reason for the ineffectiveness of the sheleg is because it's a non-bar kayoma? Without that, it would have blocked. But we just said, is it not so that sheleg is a dover makabel tuma? So Tosfos will answer that we're speaking about a case of sheleg where the owner had no machshava. He didn't intend it to serve as a mashke. Mashka, beverage, something that you consume, like food items, that are there, those are mekabel tuma. Oh, but if you didn't have any machshava to drink that, to convert that, let's say, that sheleg, that snow in your mind into a mashke, oh, so it's not mekabel tuma. Oh, it's not mekabel tuma. It should have been able to serve as a blocker of the tuma. And so to that we said, that it's like Kfar and Gleed and Borod, it's not a bar kayoma. That's the only reason it's ineffective. So now you notice that we go on in the Tosfos, Avol HaSheleg, Sheleg, which was mentioned 10 lines from the top of the Gemara, Mairi, it's speaking in our Brisa, Shelo Chishev Alov Lachila. There's a note on the next line in brackets, in the printer's brackets, that really this should be Lamashke. But that's a detail we don't have to focus on right now. The case is that the owner of that house with the window between the two rooms, he didn't have any machshava, any thinking, any plans for consuming the sheleg as a beverage. And as a result of that, the lo makabel tuma. The ichoshav alav, had he had that intention, Then in fact I would have derived the ineffectiveness of the sheleg, not because it's like borrowed and gleed and kfar, but because it is a dover makabel tuma, and that's why it would be ineffective. But as long as you don't have that machshava, it's a dover sheino makabel tuma. So why is it ineffective as a blocker of the tuma? Because it's not a bar kayoma. We continue now with the next tesis, Dibra Masl Kulan. This refers to the Gemara 11 lines from the top, and it coming off the topic we just finished, Kulan, all of them, the Sheleg, the Bored, and the Gleed, Ein Mematin B'chalon, they don't reduce the opening. I want to just point out that regarding the water, there's a separate analysis. We saw that in the Rashi already. The water doesn't last in place unless it's in a vessel, and that's the reason for it being ineffective as a blocker. But these other items, the Sheleg, Boron, and Glid, V'taymo, why are they not Memait B'chalon? Mishum De'ein Miskaimen, V'nimosin, they don't last there, they melt, D'leko L'meimar. There's no grounds for saying the taima, the reason for their ineffectiveness, mishum de kashul kaisel v'shakalahu, that they're injurious to the wall and the owner will remove them. The hamelach nami kashul kaisel v'katani. We know that salt is also injurious to the wall, and yet it was taught the katani dimemai. It was taught that it is an effective means of reducing the opening of Mairi to go to Manchi Bechaspa. The melach spoken of happened to be placed on a shard, so that in that setup, the melach won't damage the wall, and hence it will not be removed. And it's not a wall damager, and the melach, when it's on the chaspa, can block the tuma. V'hanoch nami, Lisni dimimati dimanchi b'chaspa. These two, the bora, the glid, you could have thought that, well, they're also mimayet, and you'll say that, well, these things erode walls. No, they're positioned as well on a shard. Elo afilu dimanchi b'chaspa dolo kosher l'kaiselo mimati. That's the chiddush here, is that these items, even if they happen to be on a shard, and in that capacity they won't be injurious to the wall, still they're not mimayet. Why not? Because they're ein miskaimen v'nimosim. They melt, and as such they disappear. And you can't rely on something like that. That kind of thing cannot serve as a reducer. We continue now with the next Tosfos, Dibra Maschil Chazi. This is a reference to the Gemara, 16 lines from the top, the little pieces of fabric, the matlonius. The Gemara says, how can if Shmuel is correct, how can that serve to block the tuma chazi l'kriya de levusha? Are they not fit to use as patches? That was the question on Shmuel. They're effective, they're useful, the owner will take them when, yet in the meantime they block the tumah. Now, we have, as we go into this Tosis, you'll notice that we have a brackets that appears almost immediately. These are for, we'll say, for initial skipping purposes, for just to make the reading a little easier. It says V'afal gav vadai lo mekabel tuma. Notice we skipped some information there, that even though these patches are certainly not mekabel tuma, and with that there was reason for thinking that with that in mind, they can in fact serve as a blocker because they're not mekabel tuma. Kevon delo matznule nevertheless, we say they're useful as patches because you are not going to correct myself. They're vale lo mekabel tuma, came to lumatznule. They're certainly not mekabel tuma because people do not save them, preserve them. They're very insignificant in people's eyes. Now it's true, avol mikol mokoim lo memait. Nevertheless, even though they're not mekabel tuma, that's a function of the insignificance that's attached to them. People don't store them away. If you people encounter a piece of fabric that's less than 3 by 3 fingers, people most often they'll toss them into the garbage. Avol mikol mokoim lo memayet. Nevertheless, the thinking of the one, the havamina level, is that they're not memayet. The lo mevatale. He's not going to abandon these little pieces of fabric there. The koshokile ki mitzterich likriya de levusha. He will take it from there if he needs it as a patch. So, according to Shmuel, we were suggesting that something like that should not be memite, and yet the source says it is memite, and that's how we developed our kasha on Shmuel. Now, we did skip some information here. Let's read the Tosfos again. We said Chazi likriya de levusha v'yafal gav the Omar perakama de sukkah ubeshabbos perakalakelim. Even though it was said over there in those sources that pachos mishalosh hashalosh lo chazi lo aniyim lo ashirim, less than 3 by 3 fingers of fabric is not fit for the poor and certainly not for the wealthy. It has even though that is true. Vadai lo mekabel tuma, kevan de lo matzulei. These little pieces of fabric are not mekabel tuma. People don't store them, don't hide them away in storage. Avol mikol mokom, I'm emphasizing according to the havamina, according to Shmuel, that suggested the things that you don't abandon are not chotzeitz. Avol mikol mokom lo memayit. These things should still not be effective in reducing the opening, according to Shmuel. The lo mevatelei. He's not going to abandon it there in the window permanently. Because shokil lei ki mitzterich likriya de levusha. He will take it from there if he needs it as a patch. So with that in mind. We developed our kasha on Shmuel. A person is not mevatelit there, even though it's something of such insignificance. It's not mekabel tuma. It's not fit for even the poor. But it's not something that you're mevatel. Why not? Because if you happen to need it as a patch, you'll take it from there. You will. You're not mevatelit, and yet the source says it's memayit. From that we had our kasha on Shmuel, and the Gemara answered what it answered. We continue with the next Tosis, Dibur Maschil Kivon. This refers to the Gemara 10 lines from the bottom. The source spoke about animals with dangling limbs or flesh, and the dangling limb or flesh is in the window. That's memai at the opening. We asked, maybe he'll cut it off and throw it to the dogs. And so how can you, and still it's Mimayit, that was our Akash on Shmuel, it's not something you're Mavatal there. So the Gemara said, Kevon the Ikot Tsar Balei Chayim Lo Ovid, since the cutting off of the limb would result in pain to the animal, he won't do that. He won't cut it off. He won't cut off that dangling limb to throw to the dogs. And Ve'im Tomar Kula Behema Shokil V'Shodi L'Klovim. So fine, he won't cut off the limb, but he'll take the whole animal with its dangling limb and throw it to the dogs. Feed his dogs with it. So how can and yet it serves to reduce the opening? Couldn't that serve as a kasha on? Wouldn't that still be a kasha on Shmuel? Moses says no, he won't do that. The Yeshlama Demayri Bekoif. The call the domi lay the monach hosim l'tili bay. We're talking about an animal. The animal that's in the window is something like a monkey or another animal that people have for the tiuli bay to literally to walk around with. It means to play with, and he's going to leave it there in the window. V'nicha denokat evru basar v'lo nokat behema gufa, and it's the choice of the source to speak of a limb or flesh that's dangling is the, let's say, the proper explanation, proper example, and not the animal itself. The ichazi l'tiule, if the animal itself was a fit for playing, shokil la l'tiule ba, he would take it from there to play with it. The lo chazio, and if it's not fit for that, shadi lo leklovim, he would throw the animal to the dogs. However, when you have we're going to add a little explanation based on the Sefer Tesis HaMavur, footnote 183 in that Sefer. However, when you have a dangling limb or dangling flesh situation, there he's not going to take the animal from the window to play with, since the animal can't move as a result of the dangling limb or flesh. And with that in mind, it is going to be left in the window. We continue now with the next tesis, Dibra Masul Asya. This refers to the Gemara, four lines from the bottom. The Gemara spoke about the 8-month baby in the window. How does that serve to be chaitzitz asya ime v'darle? And won't the mother come and take it away? And still we say it's chaitzitz. And that was our kasha on Shmuel. The more answer is b'Shabbos. The mother isn't going to remove it because it's on Shabbos and there's an iser tiltal on that baby. The Iri b'goyseis, and Tosfos says we're talking about the baby is in a near death situation. It's in its throes of death. Shiyamus kaidim sheitzir Shabbos. It will die before Shabbos ends. And so, as far as we are concerned, the baby is going to be remaining there, and hence Shmuel can coexist with this halacha. It's not going anywhere. V'yomar d'sham tehei kvuroso, and the baby will in fact be buried right there, right in the window. So it'll be left in the window. That is its burial. I noticed that there's some discussion in Achronim concerning is there a chiyuv kvura to begin with on a ben shmoina, and if you're going to be leaving after death in the window, it would seem that maybe there's no chiyuv kvura on such a situation. We now continue with the Tosfos. On Chof Amud Beis, the Tosfos here refers to the Gemara. The Les Bosh Yura is referring to the top line, and on Chof Amud Beis, And it's referring to the case of the chaspa, the shard that's holding the salt. And the Gemara had asked at the bottom of Chof Amud Aleph, why speak about the salt? Can't the shard that's holding? And by the way, we mentioned the shard is holding the salt so as to protect the wall from the damage the salt could cause. But can't the shard itself be a reducer of the tefach opening? So the Gemara said the less bal shira. What does that mean? It doesn't have the required dimension. Pirush, the ein shiur lachaspa lemayet mipoiseach tefach. We mentioned that there was an opening of a tefach, or it was let's say there was an opening of more than a tefach. The shard spoken of in our Gemara was such a small piece that the opening would remain a tefach, so that you had an opening a little more than a tefach. The shard itself was so small, less bashir, didn't have enough size to reduce the opening to less than a tefach. We emphasized when we were learning the Gemara that Rashi had a different take on this matter. According to Rashi, less bal shiur, I mean, it didn't have the shiur of Hilchos Shabbos, and hence the shard, regardless of whether it was able to, even if it was able to reduce the actual opening to less than a tefach, it's not effective because kamanda lesa. Halachically speaking, it's as if it's not there. Tosfos is not taking that approach. Tosfos is saying that in physical terms, the chaspa was spoken of in our Gemara was such that it would not have reduced. It wasn't sufficient to reduce the opening to be less than a tefach. The opening, even with the shard there, namely without the salt as well, the shard with the salt reduced the opening to less than a tefach. The shard alone did not, in this particular case, reduce it to less than a tefach. Now, with that approach in mind, the girsa of the Gemara is affected. The lo garsinon, and according to Tosis, you should not have the girsa, which we in fact do have, you should not have the girsa kidisnan. According to the Gemara said at the top of Chof Amud Beis, at the top of our Amud, said, the less bal shira, kidisnan, as is taught, and the Gemara went on to say, shiurim of Hilchos Shabbos, lite ben apatzim. Tosfos says you shouldn't have that girsa kidisnan. Dema inyan zeh, what's the connection? What's the relation? What's the connection between what we're talking about, namely the physical reduction to less than a tefach l'shiurei Shabbos, to shiurim, to the dimensions and quantities that affect halachas of Shabbos, halachas of Hoytzah. So don't have the word with the girsa kidisnan, meaning as is taught. Ella, and here one letter makes all of the difference. Ella, ooh, kidisnan. Bevov. Our Gemara said, the less ba shira, and then ooh, kidisnan, with a vov. Vahachi pirusho. And without our trying to, distinguish between kidisnan and uchidisnan, let the Tosfos explain himself. Behochi pirusho, and this is the explanation. What we do now is Tosfos goes over the last couple lines of the Gemara in his explanation. Ve'amai melach memayit. Why should salt be an effective reducer of the opening? Ha kishokil chaspa. The owner, when he removes the shard, when he happens to need the shard, Yosef Gama Melach, he's going to remove the salt. He's not going to leave the salt in the window without the shard. So as to prevent the salt from damaging his wall. So, Vaha, and With that question in mind, namely the question of the Gemara was focused on how is it possible that the salt can serve to reduce the opening the salt is not going to remain there, because when he needs the shard, he's going to remove the salt. He's not going to leave the salt there to damage his wall. And on that, the Gemara says, Uchidisnan Klomar. The Mairi Nami, the less bay, the source that spoke about the effectiveness of the salt sitting on the shard, is it's effective as a blocker because the shard doesn't have any use. And there's a precedent for usefulness and lack of usefulness that you find in Masechet Shabbos. Klomar, let's read that again. Klomar, de Mairi Nami, our Gemara as well, is speaking de Les Bay, Kede Litein Bein Patsim Lechavero. The Chaspa in our Gemara is not of sufficient size to use as an addition to the window frame. The Ein Roy Leklum. It's not, if it's not fit for that, it's not fit for anything. Velo Shokile. And he's not going to remove it. So the citation from Masechet Shabbos is not that we are citing the ineffectiveness of the shard as being a reducer because it doesn't have the dimensions of Hilchos Shabbos, but the Gemara is explaining why the salt is an effective blocker, and that's because it's on the shard, and the owner is not going to take the shard for some purpose because the shard is of a size that it has no usefulness. And the idea of usefulness you can see in Masechet Shabbos. And if it's not useful for that purpose, it's not used for anything, and he's not going to be taking it. And hence the salt will remain in the window because it's going to remain on the shard. V'is Sfarim Delo Garsi Chas Begufei Techutz. There are versions of the Gemara that don't have that, which we do have at the bottom of Amud Aleph. They don't have that in the Girsa to begin with, and namely the suggestion of let the Chaspa itself be the Chaitzetz El Garsinon. But their Girsa rather is V'tepuk Le Mishum Chaspa. What does that mean? Klomar, v'tepuk lei she yosir hamelach kishiyosir chaspa. This is very similar to the idea we mentioned just before. That is there not an issue of his removing the salt when he comes to remove the shard because he'll need the shard, and once again, he's going to remove it, and still it was an effective blocker of the tumah, and therefore we had a kashan shmuel. Umeshani, and to that, the Gemara answers the loshon the less ba shiura. Kiddisnan. Now here you can see where Tosfos is not adding the vav, just keeping the kiddisnan version, and saying that the chaspa doesn't have a quantity. As you can see in Masechet Shabbos, the minimum size of a shard is if it's useful for putting in a window frame. But for our purposes, it doesn't have. From Tosfos' standpoint, he's still keeping his original approach that it's physically insufficient in our Gemara of reducing the opening to be less than a tefach, and you may have asked, well, isn't he going to remove it when he removes the salt? So we answer the lo shokile, since it doesn't have any usefulness, he is not going to remove it. So just to repeat this last point, when the Gemara said the tepuk le mishum chaspa, the Gemara was really raising a question: isn't he going to remove the isn't he going to remove the salt, which is the main basis of opening reduction? Isn't he going to remove the salt when he comes to remove the chaspa? So to that we answer, he's not going to remove the chaspa because it has no use to him. It doesn't have any use. As you can see, usefulness would be something like putting in a window frame, and it doesn't have any usefulness, and hence he's not going to be taking it away, and he's therefore not going to be taking the salt away either. Before moving on to the next Tosfos, I feel it's necessary to clarify a significant difference between the two Girsos, not in terms of, we'll say, final understanding, but in terms of, let's say, mechanics of the Gemara. I want to contrast the second Girsa, which did not have in its text what you saw at the bottom of Omer Aleph, Chaspa Gufo Techutz, whereas the first Girsa had that Loshen. So to refine our explanation of that first Girsa, the Gemara had asked, Chaspa Gufo Techutz, why speak of the necessity of having the salt in the picture? Can't the chaspa, the shard itself, be chotzeitz? So to that, the Gemara at the top of Omid Beis answered, and following Tosis' explanation, the less ba shiura, namely, that even with the chaspa in place, as far as this brisa is concerned, the opening remained more than a tefach. So only combined with the salt did you reduce the opening to less than a tefach. Now, at this point, there is a lot of explanation that you have to add, not between the lines, but between the words. The next word, according to the first Girsa of Tosis, was uchedesnan. What happened at this point in the Gemara? The Gemara had said, well, you need the salt because without it, the chaspa itself will not be of sufficient size to make the opening less than a tefach. But together with the salt, the opening is less than a tefach. Ah, but still, how can the salt be effective? Is not the following still a problem? The owner might decide, hey, the chaspa that's holding the salt, I need it. I need it for some purpose. And when he takes away the chaspa for his need, for whatever purpose that is, when he takes it away, he's not going to leave the salt there, the salt that I was relying on. He's not going to leave it there. It's going to ruin the wall. So to that, the Gemara answers, and all of this is between the words. You don't see this in the text. But to that, the Gemara is answering, you don't have to worry about his taking away the chaspa for some need, because the chaspa in this case is useless. It has no purpose. It's so insignificant that it wouldn't be useful even, and now the quote from Shabbos, it wouldn't be useful even for litein bein patzim lechavero, to put in the window frame, as we explained earlier. Now, if it's not useful for that, you can rest assured it's not useful for anything. So he's not going to be taking away the chaspa, and as a result of no fear of his taking away the chaspa, he's not going to have any need for taking away the salt either. So everything remains in place, and with that we have our defense of Shmuel. At this point, let us continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur HaMaschil Vishel. This refers to the Gemara, 15 lines from the top, referring to the grinder, and the Gemara initially had thought that grinders must be kept at a distance from walls because of the vibration. And then said, well, is that really the reason for distancing grinders? What about the Chamor grinder? There's no vibration there, and yet distancing must be maintained. We just remind you, use the Pirush Chai, you'll need it for the this Tosis in particular. A lot of visuals are necessary. We have a taksir on the side, and we've written on the side, point number, first point, Hezber v'dugmois shel hamor. The Gemara, after using that word, shel hamor, we'll see a number of, we'll have an explanation and examples of hamor. Who, what is hamor? Who eitzim hanoisim? Eitzim, wood that supports things. Eitzim shalem manichim paritim shonim. Wood that's used to put various items upon it. And another point under discussion: Be'ez rechayim shayech tiryah. What in what kind of grinders is vibration harado? Harado is vibration. Where does that become an issue? Where is it present? By way of markings, you'll notice that we have a volcano shape highlighting the name Rabbeinu Hananel, and quite a ways into the Tosis, the Re as well. We will see that they have a difference of opinion. The Chokim im Shayach Har Odo Berechayim Shemafilo Yisrael Biyad. Is vibration characteristic of a grinder that you that's hand operated? Uvamilim Acheros, in other words, Haim Rechayim Shemafilo Yisrael Biyadayim Munochim Al Chamor. Do you have hand operated grinders that are positioned on the chamor, the wood support? So that issue will figure as a disagreement between Rabbeinu Hananel and the Re. Hand operated grinders as a source of vibration, which is synonymous with, are they positioned on chamor? Double underline marking, one of our series markings, appears in this Tosfos, and they are Dugmois Shel Eitzim Hanoisim Hamechune Chamor, examples of situations where you use a wood as a platform, as a basis for supporting things, and which is known as Chamor. And the diamond highlights the expression Kidisnan. Efo dugmos hanal mofiyim b'mishnayos. Where are the examples cited by Tosfos? Where are they found in various mishnayos? Now we turn to the Tosfos. Mishel chamor shalosh minha itzt rubla, a chamor type grinder. Its distance from a wall is 3 tefachim from the itzt rubla. Pirush Rabbeinu Hananel the mishel chamor. The chamor type grinder, lekotiria, there is no vibration. The ein chamor tochein bo, we're not talking about an animal operating it, which we suggested as opposed to Rashi, which did speak of that. Elo chamor kore lebinyan ha'etzim hanoisim eserechayim. The word chamor is a reference to a wood structure that supports the grinder. Kemoshim motzinu the etzim hanoisim negrem chamor. We find elsewhere that Eitzim hanoisim means that carry wood that carries things, that means that wood upon which things are placed, that is called chamor. Kamo ha'etz shehamita muteles alav. You find beds placed upon wood. Kedisnan, as you can see in Maseches Kelim, naklite hamita v'chamor tahorim. It's not necessary right now for us to explain the sources themselves. It's simply necessary right now to show how chamor appears in these mishnayos with respect to these examples. V'chein ha'etz ha'sevel shidotev migdal nikro chamor. Likewise, the wood that's used to support these different kinds of chests and closets is called chamor. Desnan chamor shetachas ha'malbein v'safsolim shetachas raglayim tahor. V'chein eitz shanapoch soymech alav nikro chamor. Likewise, the wood that the blacksmith leans upon is called chamor. Desnan chamor shel napochim tomei. And with all of those examples in mind, we say v'chein horechayim. Likewise, with grindstones, habinyan asui kemin kisei. The wood structure is made like a chair. If you look in the Pirush Chai, you'll see it's a type of platform with legs on it, like a chair has four legs. The Aleha Rechayim, and upon it you place the grindstone. Vizel, it's Trubal. This Chamor that we just referred to is the Itzrubal that we saw in the Mishnah that said that you, actually in the Tanaic source that said that if it's a Rechaim Shel Chamor, so you have to have it three Tvachim from the Itzrubal. That means from this wooden platform upon which the grinder is placed, the platform must be at a distance of three Tvachim from the neighbor's wall. The Adam Yoshev Kenegda B'Mokum Gavoa, and in operating this kind of grinder, a person sits next to it on a high chair, Mokum Gavoa, at a height. The Raglov Mesuchei Slamato, and the person sitting on this high chair, his legs are stretched downwards. Umesabe V'Galgal B'Raglov V'Toychein, and he operates the grinder with his feet. He causes the revolutions of the grindstone by some foot action. The less bay tiryo el kolbamo. There is no vibration, but there is noise that emanates from that, and that's the reason for keeping it at a distance from the wall, that the noise source shouldn't be too close. That could potentially cause damage to the wall. Avol berechayim she'odam toichen biyodav al begufo is bay nidnud v'hi tirya. However, grindstones that are operated with by hand or bodily, in those cases there is nidnud, which is tirya, which is vibration. So according to the Rabbeinu Chananel, hand-operated grindstones do cause, I would say, even vibration. When the Gemara said that we have a grindstone that does not cause vibration, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, that's specifically that kind of grindstone that's operated by his feet, as we explained, and the grindstone itself is on a wooden platform. Ulari nire, deshel chamor nami toichen biyad. According to the Ri, the chamor scenario or situation, which I believe is synonymous with a non-vibration grinder, is also hand-operated. You can find hand-operated non-vibrating grinders. Elo shuhu Al Gabi Binyan. The hand operated grinder is one that is on a structure. Kidisnam Masechas Zovim, Beperek Revi, Chamor, Shel Rechaim, Vishel Yad. You have a Chamor that figures in the context of Rechaim and Yad. And from that, you see that the yad, the hand-operated grinder, is also on a platform, on the binyan. The ha de sanya b'toisefta, the perakama de mechilten. There is a brisa at the in the first perak that says mechmarchikin. Horechayim shel yad shloisha min hashechev shehen arba min horechev v'shel chamor shloisha min etzrubel shehu shehen arba min akeles. At first glance, it would seem that there's a rechayim shel yad as one entity, and then there's a rechayim of chamor, which is another entity. So that's not what the Ri just said. Not true. We say, don't look at things like that. It's true that when you look at this particular Tosefta of a Perikama, it looks like the Rechaim Shayad is distinct from Shel Chamor. Lo Mishum de B'Shel Chamor Ein Tochen Abiyad. It's not because that when you have a rechayim on a chamor, you will never find one operated by hand. So what about this particular tosefta? Ela stam shel yad, your average, your unqualified, standard, hand-operated grinder, ein bohem chamor. Ela gabi karka, they are usually placed directly on the ground. Ulekach kotoni bosar achi vishel chamor. And that's why in that particular tosefta, after speaking about Reham Shead, it says the chamor kind of grinder. Aval travayu tochane biyad. But in theory, so to speak, both situations can be operated by hand. What do we mean by that? You have the chamor grinder, which we spoke of earlier, which is most likely operated by one's foot, and you could have a hand operated grinder as well, positioned on the chamor. That's what Tosis is referring to when it says both are avot travayu, are tochan and biyad. Both you can, maybe I'll say a little more accurately, you can have a stam shel yad, and that means a hand operated grinder that's placed directly on the ground, and also a chamor type grinder that is operated by hand as well. We continue now with Tosfos Dibur HaMasfil Shma Mino. This relates to the Gemara 19 lines from the top. Shma Mino Kalyo de Tanur Tefach. After stating the distancing from a wall with regards to an oven, and the oven had been placed on a foundation, the Gemara said that, well, we see from here the fact that there's a distinction between the Kali and the Sofa distances, that the Kalia being the base, the bottom of this foundation, only three tefachim from the wall, as opposed to the Sofa four tefachim from the wall, it shows us that the base extends a tefach beyond the rim. And the Gemara said, well, we see from here then that the measure of the kalya is a tefach, means an extra tefach beyond the rim. Ha delo ka'omar nami li'el. This kind of let's say dimension distinction could have been mentioned earlier in looking at the Gemara 13 lines from the top, when Gemara mentioned a difference in distance between the lower part of the grindstone and the upper part of the grindstone, where the lower part, the shechev, was in effect extended beyond the rechev one tefach. The Gemara there did not say Shma Mino Shechev Derechayim Nami Tefach, that the lower stone in the grindstone is a tefach wider than the upper part. Why didn't it say that? L'fishoya poshut lohem echoya. It was obvious to them. It was such a standard, well-known item that it wasn't necessary for the Gemara to spell out that dimension observation. We continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur HaMasechil Tanur. This refers to the Gemara 20 lines from the bottom. Let me correct myself. At this point, we have to go back to the Gemara, to the Mishnah, and then eventually come back to this Tosfos. So, with that having been said, let us go back to the Gemara Chof Omid Beis, the Mishnah that you find in the upper half of the Omid. Lo Yamid Odom Tanur Besoch HaBayis. Bayis, of course, literally translates as a house, but here we're referring to the ground floor. a person shall not, and here we're dealing with safety standards. The diamond highlights, you can see the word tanur, and a little later the word kira, different types of ovens, the tanur being a more heat-intense unit than the kira. So the Mishnah says, lo yamid adam tanur besocha bayis, elo im ken yesh al gabov goiva arba amos. Do not have a tanur in your house, the ground floor, unless you have above it a space of four amos. It's a rather, we'll say, in other words, the ceiling shall be four amos above the tanur. Haya mamido ba'aliyah, if you place the tanur in the second story, now you have a safety standard regarding the thickness of the floor underneath, which constitutes, of course, the ceiling of the lower story. So if you placed it in the aliyah, tzor she'ei tachtov maziva shloisha tvochim. There has to be maziva, which is, we'll call that plaster material, that you place on the rafters, the beams that constitute the ceiling. You have to have a thickness of maziva 3 tvachim. Uva kira, the kira type stove, which is less heat intense, underneath it, tefach, 1 tefach of maziva. Vim hizik, mishalem ma shehizik. If, nevertheless, damage results, the owner must compensate. Rabbi Shimon Omer lo amru kol shiur ma'alu elo shim hizik poter milishalim. These dimensions and standards were stated to relieve the owner in the case that damage results. You might ask, well, according to the Tanakhama, what's the purpose of stating these standards if you're going to have to pay for damage anyway? So we take a look at Rashi, v'im hizik, achar shehoyu sham kol hashum alolu, even if after you have all of these standards maintained, damage results, mishalei mashi hizik, you have to pay. V'af al pikein, me'akfin olav hashchenim laharchik b'chol shum alolu, Shemo Yadlik Boteim V'ein Lo Ma'alishalim. The reason for having these standards is that the neighbors, the guy upstairs, the guy downstairs, who is the neighbor of these ovens, he can insist on these minimum shiurim being maintained out of concern or fear that the owner of the oven might not have any money to pay. So that at least try to avoid damage by maintaining these safety standards. And this, once again, to repeat, this is something the neighbors can impose, can insist upon. You might have said, and I think Rashi's anticipating this, that once you say, according to the Talmud comment, that the owner's going to have to pay anyway, who cares? Why should the neighbor care? He's going to get compensated. So to that, Rashi answers, neighbors are worried maybe he's not going to have any money to compensate. So therefore, you've got to have a minimum attempt to prevent damage. And not to say, just have whatever you want, who cares? Because there are cases that if you were to take that approach, have anything, even something very thin, who cares? You're going to get compensated. Not so. The guy might not have any money with which to compensate you. So you as a neighbor are going to be insistent on some kind of minimum amount. And that's what the Mishnah is dealing with as far as the Tanakhama is concerned. Rabbi Shimon said that, well, if you maintain these standards and damage results, you are in fact exempt from paying. We continue with the Mishnah. This might appear as something familiar. We've seen this quoted earlier in our Masechta. Lo yiftach odom chonus shel nachtoimim v'shel tzaboyim tachas oitzor shel havero. If a person has an upper story, in his upper story he has an oitzor, a storage facility. What is being stored there? So we speak often of a grain storage facility. There are other situations. In a moment, we'll see another situation of what is stored. But one is not to open a store, a bakery, nor a dyer's store underneath the neighbor's oitzer, v'lo refes bokar, nor a cow stall underneath someone's oitzer. Rashi says on this, refes bokar is prohibited as well. Shal reach kosher, and he adds here liayin. Rashi, I'm sorry, we read a little prematurely. In a moment, we'll get to that. Be'emes b'yayin etiru. There's a girsa b'emes omru. That in truth, they say that if it's a storage facility of wine, hetiru avolo refes bokar. So if it's an oitzer of wine, hetiru, we would allow the chaneshel nachtoimim underneath it. We would allow a chaneshel tzavoyim underneath it. Rashi says biyayin hetiru imhoya oitzer sheyayin. If it's a wine storage area above, hetiru luftoch tachtov chaneshel nachtoimim tzavoyim. And Rashi says sheina oshen kosheliyayin. The smoke that would be coming from the bakery or from the dyer's store would not be injurious to wine. The issue of smoke will figure as something Tosfos will make reference to. However, that the permission we grant for the nachtoimim and tzavoyim does not extend avolo refes bokar. This is the Rashi we read prematurely before. Not a refes bokar because the foul odors emanating from a refes bokar are injurious to the wine. The Gemara opens up with a discussion focusing on the standards, the statistics that we stated earlier. V'hotanya b'tanur arba'a. If you want to put a tanur in an aliyah, you have to have four tvachim of floor thickness. So b'kira shloshan, if it's a kira in the upper story, three tvachim. Contrast this with the diamonds before. And use all the markings. We have arrows and diamonds. The arrow points above to the line following the tanur. It says shloisha. Here it says tanur arba. It's a discrepancy. Likewise, above we spoke about the kiro tefach, and here in this source, kiro shloisha. Amar Abaye, kitanya ahi. The brisa with the larger dimensions, the larger standards, are bedinach toimim, a formal bakery. Nachtoimim is a formal bakery, as opposed to in the Mishnah, which spoke about in the ratio of the Mishnah, there was no reference to bakeries. Bakeries did appear later in the Mishnah by the issue of bakeries under an oitzer. But in the ratio of the Mishnah, spoke about a private homemaker's tanur. So when you're dealing with a baker's nachtoimim, the heat there is more intense. The tanur didon, the tanur, our tanur, the homemaker's tanur mentioned in the Mishnah that spoke about three tfachim, our home tanur, hikiro denachtomim, is like the cooler baking unit of bakers, the kira of the nachtomim. You see there, three tfachim, just like the tanur mentioned in our Mishnah, the homemaker's tanur is like the baker's kira. Just read that phrase again. The tanur didon ki kira denachtomim domi. Our homemaker's tanur is similar to the baker's kira with the accompanying standards. Three tvachim. Lo yiftach chonus v'chulei tana im hoya refes bokor kaidemes la oitzar muter. If the cow stall was there before the oitzer, and then the neighbor upstairs decides to open an oitzer, the cow stall can remain. So that teaching is very clear if there is an actual cow stall in place. Boy, Abaye. Before we continue, we glance at the side under our topic heading where it reads, Isur psichas mekoymei samazikim la oitzer. He spoke about the prohibition of opening things that would be injurious to an oitzar. Ha'im iser zeh rak kishkvar kayem oitzar? Does this prohibition apply only if the oitzar is already there? O afilu im yesh hachona l'oitzar? Even if there is, let us say, you can see the neighbor upstairs is preparing to create an oitzar. Can I put a cow stall in downstairs? So, boy, abaye. Kibein v'ribeitz l'otzer mahu. Riba v'chalonos mahu. Bono alio agabi beso mahu. We have a series of questions that end off with teku. Let's go over the questions. The first one, kibein v'ribeitz l'otzer. There's an upper story where a person swept out and washed down the floor. Rashi adds kibei v'ribeitz gagoi l'tzorcha oitzar. V'lo hispik l'hachnis lo itvua. Person in the gago is the roof. Certainly, it's the upper part of this structure. The owner of the roof started to sweep out and wash down the roof for in anticipation of creating an oitzer, and he didn't bring in the actual material, the actual grains. He didn't bring them in yet, but we see he's planning to bring them in. And in the meantime, the guy, the downstairs guy, opened a chanus. We mentioned the chanus. Is that considered like it was taught in the source? That if the Refes Boker was there before the Otzer, if the, we'll say, the source of damage is there before the Otzer, is this called before the Otzer? O Dilma, to give him the Gibbet rebates, having Kikidim Otzer. Or maybe we say that since he did actions that indicate his intention of making an Otzer, that is tantamount to having the Otzer there first. And then you cannot open up the damaged sources underneath. That was as far as kibei v'ribeitz is concerned. The second issue Rabbi raised was riba b'chalonos. A man owned an upper story, and he didn't bring his grains in yet, but he opened windows, created windows so that air can circulate in there, and that air circulation will prevent the grains that he eventually brings in there from rotting. So is that considered that form of preparation of oitzer, is that considered the oitzer there first? And the last question that he raised was bona aliyah agabi beso. Rashi says, Bona aliyah agabi beso al gago. He built an attic on the roof. In other words, the roof is generally an open entity. And he built walls and a ceiling on his roof. Regilin hayu livnoi sham l'oitzer mawit. It was standard practice to create oitzers on rooftops. Im timtza loimar. Now here Rashi deals with Gemara structure. This question is coming on the heels of that which was mentioned before, namely, Im tim tzaloma riba b'chalonos lav hakdoma hu. If you say that the mere opening of windows is not considered as if the otsu is there first, hefi de kule binyona lahi avid mai. What? How would we view if a man troubles himself not just to open windows but to create an entire structure for otsu purposes? What is the din then? Is that considered as if the grains are already there, or maybe not? And we end off this series with teku. It remains unresolved. Boy, Rav Huna, Bray, Rav Yeshua. We continue in the Gemara. Rav Huna asks, Tamri v'rimoni mai. Tamri are dates, rimoni pomegranates that one stores. Are they also considered an otzer? If he had this attic and he loaded up his attic with tamrim tamar v'rimonim, is that considered the beginning of an oitzer? Or maybe we say that, as Rashi says, that the concept of oitzer is limited to grains, wine, and oil. And this too remains as teku, unresolved. Be'emes, b'yayin hetiru v'chulei. Tana, b'yayin hetiru, the Brisa elaborates on what the Mishnah said. We allow wine. We allow the Chanes shel Nachtoimim and the Tzaboyim underneath a storage area of wine. B'yayin hetiru, we'll allow the Chanish Nachtoimim underneath a wine oitzer, but we will not allow a refes boker underneath a wine oitzer, because the foul odor emanating from the refes ruins the wine. Omar Rav Yosef, hai didon, our wine, afilu kutro de shrugan amikashile, even the kutra, the smoke rising from a shrug, from a candle, will be injurious. In other words, our wine is not like the Mishnayos wine. Rav Yosef ben Amora, a later period, or maybe because of his area, he refers to his wine. Our wine is so sensitive that even smoke from a candle would ruin it. So that even though on the Tanaic level we see a heter for having a source of smoke under wine, but that's because that wine was of that kind of quality that it wasn't affected by smoke. Not so with regard to our wine. Our wine is very sensitive. Omar Rav Sheshes, the aspasto kerefes boker damya. Aspasto is, Rashi says, shachas shel tvua. It's grains at a very early stage of development. You shall not store up grains at the aspasto level, that early stage of development, underneath an otzer shel yayin, since it's very it's lach, it's not dried out, it's grain in an early stage of development, it's still very fresh, and it the heat develops from that. And a rotting smell arises. That Rashi says mala sirchin. So therefore, that would have the same characteristic of a refes boker, and it shall not be allowed underneath the otzer shel yayin. We turn now to the Tosfos. Dibor hamaschil tanur didon kekira denachtomim domi. This refers to the Gemara 20 lines from the bottom of the Omid, where after introducing a brisa with different statistics than we saw in the Mishnah, Abaye resolved the two sources by indicating that the higher standards applied to the nachtomim, where the result of that was the observation that our tanur is like the nachtomim's kira. Tosfos says, kol echad haya oise tanur shelo kfi ma shoya roitze gadol o katan. When it comes to tanur manufacture, everyone made a tanur according to his needs, whether it be a large one or a small one. Avol kirois shel nachtoimim hayu kulon shavois. When it comes to the baker's kira, they had a standard size. Avol kirois shel nachtoimim hayu kulon shavois v'hayu bekiyin bohen, and they knew what that was. So Tosfos is making a distinction between the practice in the manufacture of tanur, of the ovens, which were more a source of greater heat intensity than kiros. Kiros, baker's kiros had a standard size, and they knew what that was. V'nafkamina lemekach u'memkar, and awareness of this has practical applications for in business transactions. Namely, that if you were to, let us say, order a kira, the provider would have to provide you with that standard size. If you were ordering a tanur, then unless you specify what size you want, the provider could provide you with whatever, and as long as it's some considered a tanur, it would be a good deal. It would be you couldn't undo the deal. But once again, in the case of a kira, since it has the kira of the nachtema had a standard size, if you order one to be made, it would have to be made in accordance with that particular dimension. We now turn back to the Gemara, the Mishnah, at the bottom of Chof Amud Beis. Chanus Shebechotzer. Here we're dealing with, I like to call it noise pollution, and issues of neighborliness. Chanus Shebechotzer, a store that's in a courtyard, Yochol Limchois, the neighbors could protest. Yochol Limchois Biyada V'lomar Lo, a neighbor could say, Yochol Lishon Mikol HaNichnosim Mikol HaYoytzim. I can't sleep because of all of the customers entering and exiting. Aval oise kelim yotze u'mochir b'soch hashuk. However, if someone manufactures vessels, he can manufacture them in the courtyard and then go out and sell them in the public market. V'eino yochol limchois biyado v'lomar v'lomalo. With that in mind, the neighbor cannot protest and saying eino yochol lishon lo mikol patish v'lo mikol rechayim v'lo mikol tinoikas. You can't say I can't sleep because of the noise of the hammer and the grinder and the kol hatinoikas. The Gemara that will be dealing with as far as the balance of today's shiur focuses on this last point, the kol hatinoikas. The thinking right now is the sound of the children, and Rashi says that kolsalka daita of tinoikas aboim liknos yain v'shemen v'chol dover nimkor b'chonus. The Mishnah spoke about a store in a courtyard. The Reisha said that the neighbors can protest the noise coming from the customers, and the Seifa seems to contradict that and talks about you cannot protest the kol hatinokos, the children that are coming in to buy from that store. So this leads the Gemara to ask, Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seifa? Why? What's the difference between the Reisha and Seifa? And the Reisha, the neighbors can protest the sounds, the noise coming from the customers, and the Seifa, it said, Eino yochol limkos mikol hatinokos. Omar Abaye, Seifa ason lechotzer acheres. The Seifa that said you cannot protest, that's talking about a case of noise coming from a different courtyard. Namely, one was located in courtyard A, cannot protest neged noises coming from a store that is located in Chotzer B, selling to the public. Omar Le Rova Yachi, if your explanation is correct, listening, it should have said Chotzer Acheres Mutter, that a store in a different Chotzer, in a neighboring Chotzer, that is allowed, and he's allowed to maintain his business without surrendering to the protests of the other courtyard. But it doesn't say that. Elo Omar Rava. We continue now with the Gemara at the top of Daf Chof Aleph. So Rava says, Seifa ason letinoikis shel beis rabon umitakonas Yoshua ben Gamlo v'yelech. The Seifa that speaks about the inability to protest, the lack of right to to protest from the sound of the tinoikas, the children, not referring to children that are customers of the store. It's talking about children that are in that chotzer to study Torah. Those are the tinoikas of Beis Rabban, and that was characteristic of the time period from the rulings made by Yoshua ben Gamla. We're not going to go further in the Gemara in this context of this particular shiur, so we're not going to we'll see later though, Mirza Shem, in the Gemara, what's the significance of the reference to Yoshua ben Gamla. But for our purposes, the seifa of the Mishnah is saying that neighbors cannot protest. Neighbors cannot protest the noise coming from the children who are in the chotzer for the study of Torah. In looking at the Rashi at the top of Daf Chof Aleph Mad Aleph, Seifo Ason L'Tinoikas Shel Beis Rabban, Rashi points out the Afagav Dekil Habo Machmas Achirim Lo Motzi Mechuye. Even though the noise here in the case of Tinoikas Shel Beis Rabban is noise coming from Machmas Achirim. What does Machmas Achirim mean? So I think it means that even though it's coming from people that are achirim, they're outsiders, they're outside of this chotzer, they're outsiders coming in, and by the way, that is in contrast to the case of the store, where people in the chotzer could protest the sound of the outsiders, these are achirim coming from, customers coming from outside. Even though in the case of the children, they are likewise coming from outsiders, lo motzi mechuya, here you cannot protest. And the Gemara had pointed out, this is from the time of Yoshua ben Gamla v'Elech. We are not going on into the Gemara to see what that's a reference to, but let us point out this much, that the concept of, say, educational institutions for the study of Torah started in that time. We're talking about a time dating back to the second Beis HaMikdash, where, you know, say, the original style of Torah communication was father to son. But we'll see in the Gemara how that say educational structure or institution, father to son, became unreliable. What about children that don't have fathers? So the concept of an educational system was instituted by Yoshua ben Gamla, and as a result, children from other places would come to a central location for the study of Torah. Now that central location involved what Rashi refers to of Kol Habo Machmas Achirim, children coming from outside the chotzer. That noise the members of the chotzer cannot object to. Now we turn to the Tosfos Dibur Maaseh Umai. This is the last Tosfos on Chof Amud Beis, referring to the Gemara we just saw, two lines from the bottom of Chof Amud Beis, Maishno Reisha Umaishno Seifa. What Tosfos does is he explains along the lines that we saw in the Rashi. Hashta Salka Daitach, the thinking initially of the Gemara is the Tinoikas de Seifa, the reference to the Tinoikas at the end of the Mishnah, where we saw that one cannot protest. Hainu, Sheboin Litnais Bechanus, those are children coming to buy in the store. Umishim Hachi Parach, Maishna. And as a result, the question is, well, why in the Sefer you're dealing with customers, you cannot protest? And in the Reisha, we saw that in the case of customers coming to buy in the store, the neighbors of that chotzer could protest. Aval mipatish v'rechayim lo porach. Regarding the case of the hammer and the grindstone, there is no, the Gemara is not asking any questions concerning that. The ein shom nichnosim v'yotzim, regarding the customers coming from outside to gain the services of the manufacturer, people coming from outside to that doesn't exist. The mi sheyesh lo chitim litchain, someone who has grains that need the reichaim grinding. Noisein lebal harechayim v'toichin. He gives them to the owner of the grindstone, and he grinds them. Now, Tosfos, my opinion here is very, very, very terse. So I saw in commentaries that when it comes to people needing grinding services, they'll bring a large quantity of grain for a one-time grinding. And it doesn't involve, let's say, constant traffic. And that's what Tosfos means here when he says that when it comes to the issue of the Patish Mechayim, you don't have this issue of constant traffic. Let's read that again. Sheyesh, the Einsham Lechos of Yotzim, the Mishyesh Lo, Chit and Litchoy, Noisin Labar, Rechayim, Vatochain, Vechain Patish. The same thing with people that require the services of someone who's operating or working with a hammer. Hence the difference. Hence the Gemara didn't ask why in the Reisha do we say you can protest, and in the Seifa you cannot protest. And that issue was limited to the issue of customers in the store. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.